1997 to help keep downtown clean and safe. We serve our members through providing capital improvement, resources, and research, as well as promotion of public-private partnerships. You may know us from our hospitality and maintenance teams, our red and black uniforms that you see on the streets of downtown DC every day, trying to keep clean, safe, and friendly for our residents, workers, and visitors. The coronavirus has required us all to make changes rather quickly. We focus efforts and reprioritize our initiatives. This is true for most industries and individuals, but perhaps none more so than those of you operating businesses and working in the restaurant and food and beverage industry. And so today we wanted to hold this roundtable to provide a set of unique perspectives, resources, ideas, and information, as well as provide a forum to answer questions that folks may have in this industry. We are going to be joined later on in the program by DC's Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development, John Falcecchio, who will also provide us with an update on what DC is doing to help our business community during this time. But we have a really great group of panelists who have agreed to join us today. We are joined by Ann Emig, who is the Associate Director of Cities for Revel Electric Moped Company, Charlie Jeffers, who is the Head of Innovation for Hors de Marc, Colin Gilchrist, CEO and founder of Union Kitchen, not too far from my office. Thank you, Colin. Kathy Hollinger, President and CEO of Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington. Tim Ma, who is the Executive Chef of American Sun and Eaton Workshop. And Zach Grable, who is the Board Chair of the DMV Food Truck Association and co-owner of DC Slices. And as I mentioned, we will also be joined by John Falcecchio. So to get it started, I'm going to ask our panelists to introduce themselves and their business and association, and really just answer the question how the COVID-19 crisis changed their operating strategy, their marketing strategy, and their business focus, and what tools or resources are helping them navigate this new environment. So I am going to truly play the role of moderator and call our panelists in order. I'm hoping that we could answer the question in 2 to 3 minutes so that we have sufficient time for follow-up questions. So why don't we start with you, Anne?
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is Anne Emig. I'm Associate Director of Cities with Revel. I hope that this finds everyone healthy. Really want to say thank you for having me today. It's been really inspiring to see the response from this community. And I'm excited to tell you about Revel's newly launched free membership program for restaurants. So just to give a little bit of background on Revel, we are a shared electric moped company. You have probably noticed our blue and black mopeds when we began rolling them out last August. Really grateful to the city, in particular the Department of Transportation, who's been a fantastic partner to us. Our vehicles are licensed, street legal. They ride in the street, they park curbside, no riding on sidewalks, no parking on sidewalks. Each user must be 21, have a valid driver's license and a safe driving history, which we verify when users sign up. Every moped also comes with 2 DOT certified helmets. In regard to what we're doing in terms of the COVID-19 response, we, consistent with Mayor Bowser's stay-at-home order, we have asked all our riders, you know, to stay at home except for essential trips, but we do remain there for people who need to take those essential trips. And just this last week, we've announced a program to support local restaurant owners and their employees as they pivot to focus on mostly delivery services during the COVID-19 closures. We're giving a month of free rides so restaurants can keep their own employees on staff to deliver food if they choose to, and we're not collecting any fees. We're starting out with this on a month-long basis, and then we're going to evaluate how things go just as the pandemic plays out. So far in DC, our partners include Jetty's, Surfside, Millie's, and Due South, and we really hope that we can help as many local restaurants as we can during this difficult time. So if you are a restaurant owner or you know a restaurant owner who might benefit from this, please reach out. And I know the DC BID is going to be sending some information about how you could do that after this call. The last thing I'll mention is that this program is on the heels of another initiative that we launched a month ago, which is free rides for healthcare workers. And we've been doing that again for about a month so that healthcare workers can travel safely alone to their critical jobs. So thank you again for having me and looking forward to hearing you.
Thank you so much, Anne. Charlie, I'm going to turn it over to you for an introduction. Charlie, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry, Neil. Just unmuted. I'm Charlie Jeffers. I'm with OrderMark, and we are an order aggregator. So what we do is we get orders from a lot of different online ordering companies like Grubhub, Uber Eats, Postmates, DoorDash. And we'll take those orders and we can aggregate them all to one tablet or for delivery and pickup, as well as we can dump them into your point of sale system. So as you know, we've probably hit a huge peak this month. We have a lot of delivery orders happening around the US. And even in the DC area, we have a lot of restaurants that we're handling. The nice thing is we allow companies to choose who they want to partner with online ordering and change and pivot depending on what their demand is. So once the pipe's built in to a tablet or to a point of sale system, you can choose different partners, turning them on and off without having to recreate the menu each time. And we have a menu piece in the middle that allows you to have one menu that we can upload to all the services. So it makes it much easier during this crazy time of trying to, what are you going to sell? What are you going to bring to the customer? For us, our business has, you know, usually we do 300 or 400 restaurants. And currently this month, we sold about 1,000 and had to install about 840. So it's been, you know, quite the challenging learning curve for us at the same time. We've seen orders nationally double for online ordering and delivery. So, you know, people are trying to do whatever they can to get business out. I've seen success stories to people who planned it. Even a steak company like Mastro's, they went from 2,000 or 3,000 orders a week to 9,000 to 19,000 orders a day per restaurant. But it's all pivoting, getting the messaging out to your customers. So that's pretty much where I stand on it. And, you know, we're here to help.
Thank you so much for being here to help. Colin, how about you? What are you guys doing? And tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah, hi, I'm Colin, CEO of Union Kitchen. Union Kitchen exists in kind of a few different ways, but we exist to build successful food businesses that we support in launching food CPG brands. And you'll find those in our stores, which we have throughout DC, including nearby some of your offices. We also have a handful of other stores out the city. We couple that with a manufacturing facility in Northeast DC and Ivy City, where we've got about 100 businesses that are producing food that, you know, represents a lot of our local supply chain, kind of manufacturing side, then into a distribution warehouse that we manage, and then to grocery stores throughout the region. You can find the number of products in, yes, and streets and moms and Whole Foods and a variety of other local stores, inclusive of our own stores. So that's our business. You know, we've been affected in many ways, good, bad. You know, the theme is unpredictable. We've had some stores where people come and buy lots of things. We've had some stores that, you know, no one comes into. You can imagine the downtown store is largely empty. But we've made a commitment to our members and to our community to stay open and provide essentials, whether it's sanitizer, toilet paper, or it's just samples and food that people can come and grab and get. In terms of the impact it's had on on our manufacturing, it's obviously been significant. We've had to change a lot of the way that manufacturing is done to incorporate, you know, the recommendations that CDC and other groups have put out. So we've had to do a lot of adapting to that. We've had about half of our businesses have closed, or, you know, are taking a pause or a break. We're hoping that we can help them pivot into consumer packaged goods, which are doing well now. Largely, we're seeing the impact on caterers and folks that were kind of event-based. But we're doing our best to kind of help the local supply chain stay strong and keep money in it and keep it going and keeping people employed. And that's kind of our number one focus and our number one goal as we work through, you know, what's been a month and looks like it will be a few more months.
Thank you so much, Colin. Kathy Hollinger, I don't think you need an introduction, but for those who may not know the Restaurant Association, please introduce the association and then specifically tell us how this crisis has changed REMW's operating strategy, your marketing strategy, and your business focus.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see faces. So yes, as an organization, we represent a couple thousand restaurant operators and food service professionals, mostly restaurants that are in that 96% independently operated and owned. So the smaller folks and majority folks in our market. But we are an organization that is really designed to be a community for our industry of operators. And we offer, you know, training in food handling, food safety, the required training that every restaurant has to have, but also advocacy as it relates to legislative or regulatory advocacy. And then the ongoing marketing support that's rooted in programming designed for butts and seats marketing. So given those are kind of our three tenets of what we do as an organization for our community, that hasn't changed, but the how has changed in that we're still offering the training, we're still offering the advocacy, and we're still offering the programming, but it looks very different. So, given this industry really had to pivot within seconds to adjust to what new mandates were as to how they should operate, and given they are still considered essential employers and employees, we have really been focused on how we can be a voice as we help them navigate, be a voice to get them relief, which is most important. Knowing that initially it was rooted in access to cash, access to any kind of relief and funds out there, but also help figure out what this federal relief would look like. And then marketing what they are currently doing to make sure that there is awareness that these restaurants are still open, and although they are opened in a modified fashion, how can we let as many people know that restaurants are 100% a food source for residents in neighborhoods across the region. So really the focus has been in this new temporary normal, how are we getting our community resources? So we have collected a variety of resources that we offer through our website that speak to unemployment insurance and how to navigate that, federal loan opportunities, orders that are in place across the region, free trainings, best practices, what others are doing to kind of create a hub for our community. So it's been day to day in terms of what is new news and what they need to know. But our focus right now is to be that hotline that we need to be for our operators to be able to sustain a pretty uncertain time.
Thanks so much, Kathy, for that introduction. Tim, before I ask you to speak. I've had the pleasure of enjoying your food many times a week while the restaurant was open. If I'm losing any weight, it's because I don't have access to your cooking. So we're gonna have to make some arrangements offline for that. But Tim, tell us a little bit about your organization and how you guys are pivoting during this crisis.
Yep. Thanks, Neil. My name is Tim Ma. I'm the executive chef here at Eaton DC, and more specifically, American Sun. Excuse me. And I'm also involved in a couple other ventures here in the city, one being Prather's on the Alley in Mount Vernon Triangle, and the other being Lao Ban Dumplings, actually in Union Market. So I'd like to specifically thank Cullen for keeping Union Kitchen open, because that's actually where we produce our dumplings. And so we're still able to do that and stay in business, and we have so thank you for that. And then Kathy, of course, for all the support, because I'm not sure everybody understands, but like we've had the pit, well, maybe everybody does, as restaurants or as hotels, we've had to pivot almost daily, and we've had to pivot to be, to step into different shoes every day. So I've actually personally emailed Kathy on many occasions asking for help on certain things that I just don't understand, and maybe nobody on my team understands sometimes, because things change so quickly. And so having that help is very critical for us right now. So I think I'll speak more about like the pivots that we have been doing, and we pivot almost every day to different styles of business and across the board, because I see it from big business like hotel and hotel restaurants down into like something very small to like our little stall in Union Market. And those things can have kind of been flipped upside down.
Thanks so much, Tim. I noticed you didn't respond to my inquiry about a regular staple, but we'll talk offline.
maybe later.
Next is Zach. So Zach, as you know, food trucks are part of the fabric here in downtown DC. And hopefully when this is all behind us, they will be returning in large numbers. But tell us a little bit about the Food Truck Association and how you guys are pivoting during this crisis.
Thanks for having me, and I'm glad to see there's so many participants. Oh, sorry, there's some feedback there. Hopefully it's not my computer. Anyways, the market dropped out beneath us, especially for food trucks, because we didn't have any place to go. So we, and our members were freaking out about that. So the first thing we could do was, similar to the Restaurant Association, provide as much information as possible. Almost became a deluge of information. So we started to try and make it very basic, you know, like cut out as much as possible, and just let them know that they could contact us as much as possible for that information. We have a tool that we created for our membership so that we can talk to each other very quickly. And whether it's over financial aid, vending opportunities, because it turned back to 2010, where we were just trying to like find our place in the world again, and everybody was just going out and roaming and trying to find business. And so the opportunities that we can funnel through the organization to our membership through this communication tool became very important. We also decided immediately that membership had to be free to try and, well, one is financially, everybody was really didn't want to, everybody was cutting costs, including my company. And, but to entice more people to come into the organization, we're offering free membership so that they can get access to the resources that we're providing, the list of funding locally and nationally, the communication tool, and then we also have a weekly newsletter that we send out, and all the vending opportunities that we get that we pass on to the membership. And then also just talking to each other is more important than we might realize, therapeutically. And also just, I've had 3 calls today with other food trucks, and we're just chatting about what's happening, like where can we go, what can we do. That being said, I know there's some questions later on, but there's a plus side. We're slowly finding our place in the world, and I can talk about that more later on.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to go into some specific questions, and just to ensure that you know who I'm directing the question to, I will call your name. So, Anne, why don't we start with you? I understand that Revel's partnership with restaurants has just started. Is there any initial feedback from your restaurant partners on how the program is impacting their businesses from a bottom line perspective?
Yeah, so the program is very new. We've just launched it this past Tuesday, but we've been receiving really positive feedback so far as restaurants are just trying to figure out their own logistics, and just knowing that this can be a free resource, I think has just been really well received thus far. Our focus has really just been trying to speak with as many restaurants as possible. Many are still deciding what their course of action is going to be. We just want them to know that this is here as a resource if it is helpful to help them keep some staff on payroll, deliver food to people who are staying at home by using this fleet as part of their delivery service. And also do want to just thank the DC BID and Kathy for helping us get the word out about this on quick turnaround. So thank you for that.
Great, thank you. So Tim, you talked earlier about pivoting, and you said you'd share some more about how you're pivoting and your business is pivoting. So this is the opportunity to tell people what you're doing differently as part of your pivot.
So when the when the mandate came down, I think a couple days before, we had already seen all the signs that it was coming. So we quickly transitioned over, like everybody else, into a takeaway service or a to-go service. Granted, most of us didn't have it set up, so, and I think I speak for a lot of restaurants, like kind of like in my area, we all had to call Uber Eats and Caviar and Grubhub and all those things and get all this set up, which wasn't a trivial thing as you're trying to. Like step one was to control expense management at that point. So, you know, cut as many things as you can because you know revenue is going to drop. And then the second part of that is get all those logistics set up. And then the third part of that was figure out how to generate revenue again in a completely new world that your restaurant or your hotel or your whatever your food service is in an environment where everything went to nil. Like I heard some numbers like, hotel occupancies went, you know, from like 80% to like 5% in a matter of days. And that is just not a sustainable thing. So with that, you know, as part of your expense management, you're cutting out things that you normally rely on, like PR or marketing or other associations that help you get the word out there. And so you become your own expert at that as well. And so that's why, you see so many people on social media now. And so while all of that was happening, you know, it became a very crowded space in terms of to-go food. And so I think it was very good at the beginning and people were out there and still were allowed to be out there. I think as weeks went on, you started to see business trail off. And so we actually at Eaton and also at Prather's made the decision at that point to turn our efforts to how we can help the community and specifically the food and beverage community for us, but then the community as a whole. So we've actually partnered with World Central Kitchen, and like a big shout out to Jose Andres for really like using his platform to not only like feed a bunch of people that need that, you know, need help with feeding themselves, but also utilizing the restaurants in this city. We're not the only restaurant, there's other restaurants in the city to help produce the food. So not only does that help our restaurants and keep us going by allowing us to keep people employed, but also helping the mission overall and helping our city directly. So there's another association called Hook Hall Helps that we are in the restaurant association that has partnered with that. And we are assisting them. And I like that because it takes it a step more personal in that we are cooking here and providing meals, and they are distributing from Hook Hall to feed our food and beverage furloughed employees, which is a lot. Our city has a lot of people who got furloughed, and every little bit helps, just like for the businesses, every little bit of assistance is helping us right now. And so as of actually, I think today, American Sun is pivoting to just only cook for philanthropic purposes. And the last one I'll speak of is that in addition to Hook Hall Helps and World Central Kitchen that we're providing food for, we're still cooking for our own employees, which was the number one priority, was to take care of our own furloughed employees. So that's kind of where the pivot is. So I'm starting to see a lot of restaurants, not just here in DC, but actually across the country, do that as well, where they're just pivoting to, okay, it's time to use our efforts to help people in the way that we can.
Thanks so much, Tim. Thanks for mentioning the work that Jose Andres and his team are doing. For those of you who don't know, the Downtown Bid operates a day service center for people experiencing homelessness, one of the communities that's heavily impacted by COVID-19. So we are providing daily lunch service downtown DC for people who are homeless. And a couple of days ago, Jose Andres showed up with food to support our initiative. So we really appreciate the work that World Central Kitchen is doing, not just here in downtown DC, but around the country and around the world. So shout out to Jose. Charlie, let me ask you a question. This, given what Tim just articulated as his pivot, what advice do you have for those who want to start offering takeout delivery, but worry about the effort or investment to do so? Charlie, I think you're talking, but your microphone is off. You're on mute.
Sorry about that. As Tim was saying, you have to pivot. You have to work differently. The investment's pretty easy to get in, but then the investment isn't easy because you have to look at the most profitable food items you can sell out there today. You have to look at meal kits. You have to look at a different way to present your business, you know, online for the people that are out there today. That are eating, and you know, money's tight. Delivery services, though, some are giving deals like DoorDash. You know, Uber Eats is coming in now with deals for your percentages and lowering it, but you have to look at it differently. We're seeing, you know, nationwide online ordering, the amount of orders that we process have gone up significantly, but we're seeing a huge churn, restaurants pausing, restaurants that can't figure it out. Have areas where they can't deliver their food. So we're seeing that at the same time, but we see the orders go up. People have to eat, and the people that can afford to eat, it's also somewhat of their entertainment because they can't go out. So produce something that they can eat and change it daily if you need to. You know, it is a tough little world out there right now. You know, and we're also giving back to the community and working in food banks at the same time to help out the people in our neighborhoods.
Charlie, thanks so much. Zach, I'm going to turn it over to you. So my question to you is, are your food truck able to partner with food delivery services to open up access to customers in any way?
For the most part, yes. There's complications for a lot of the food trucks out there to start up the third-party delivery apps or to start up their own in-house delivery apps. A lot have and a lot are figuring that out. A primary problem is since we don't have a lot of trucks don't have brick and mortars, they can't have a physically tied address. And most of the delivery apps are very immobile. Once you have that location, it's really hard to change the location. It needs to be a very fluid system. If you're going to be hopping around from location to location offering vending, Uber Eats is probably the easiest third-party delivery app. But there's other programs out there for trucks to use. I think some of the best one, in my opinion, is GoodFind, because it integrates a scheduling mechanism, a Google GPS type of tracking system, a pre-ordering system. And so the biggest thing, I think the most successful place for trucks to go right now.
Zach, I know you're talking, but I don't think we can hear you. If you can.
Good.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so it's a challenge, and it depends on the application. DC Slices, we have four different ones going, plus our own in-house.
Possible.
And I think as far as the investment side goes, as to like kind of what you had just asked Charlie, it's totally worth it. Yeah, there's the commissions, of course, but it's really, you're accessing new customers, because customers might only use DoorDash, or they might only use Uber Eats, and they may not be able to find you because there's so much noise in the delivery world right now. And so the more markets you can open yourself up to, the more successful you're going to be.
So, you know, my area, Zach, I saw food trucks get, you know, a restaurant pulled them into their parking lot, and they use that physical address. So they put a whole bunch into the parking lot of that restaurant, and they all worked out of that area. The food delivery guys would all come pick up food from there. I thought it was a pretty cool idea.
That type of collaboration is heartwarming. I love to hear that type of stuff. I've had a neighborhood, Crestwood neighborhood, contact us, and they organized the whole neighborhood to organize a big delivery. And there's several other neighborhoods like this where they're coming together to help out small businesses. And that's fantastic stuff. I like that idea of trucks being able to partner up with anything, even like a church or something like that, you know, park at the church or something like that.
Yeah, Zach, thanks so much. So I know in Baltimore City, a lot of that neighborhood collaboration is occurring, where food trucks are being able to provide food for apartment buildings, organizing the menu by specific days. And so there's a lot of collaboration opportunities that people are thinking up. Let me turn to Kathy Hollinger. Kathy, what are you hearing from local restaurants? What kind of data do you have that may help us understand the impact that COVID-19 has had on the industry to date?
Yeah, so we, you know, we collect data every few days, probably much to our operators' chagrin. We're always asking them for numbers, but it's helpful as we're talking about relief. So right now, we have about 62% of restaurants who they are open. They're open in this modified way. 38% who have temporarily decided to close for reasons, you know, like Tim's mentioned and others mentioned, where, you know, you have to look at your model and see if you're going to be able to sustain this new normal for a period of time. And it's not easy for a full service restaurant to decide that they are going to now pivot to operate delivery and curbside takeout only. All of them, regardless, have seen about 70%, if not more, decrease in sales. So, you know, you're really lucky if you are bringing in maybe 20-some percent. I will say that range is, it's week to week. There are restaurants who have decided to pivot and do a different model or do more of what Tim is doing in terms of being a anchor for the community and seeing how they can offer those services in that way. The numbers around unemployment, I mean, we have 25,000 who have been laid off or furloughed just within our local industry. And we are hearing that thankfully people are starting to get, they're starting to see some checks, but it was a really bumpy road in the beginning, as you can imagine, as everybody was inundated as they were trying to put their arms around what had to change very quickly. So those are our numbers. I think as we go through this process, they will modestly change. I mean, you are gonna have that 38% who are currently temporarily closed. There are ones that are trying to get back in to figure out how they can be a part of this takeout or delivery, or also think about repurposing their footprints to be community kitchens or to be grocery stores and markets, which we have seen some operators do, and they're doing it successfully, making sure that everyone understands success is defined very differently today. It is a, I got through this day, or I got through these couple of days. So those are the numbers that we are seeing. You know, we can talk about relief and numbers there, but in terms of what we are seeing as a snapshot of what is happening in our market right now, that's where we are.
So Kathy, why don't I stay with you since you teed it up. Are you anticipating any additional relief or resources coming for DC area restaurants for employees?
I will say that, you know, relief comes in many, many different forms. You know, what Anne is doing at Revel is a great, that's a great example of relief that our operators are so grateful for any kind of relief. So as we are looking to, yes, guide people to look at all of the relief that is out there, that is really designed, Neil, you and I talked about it a little bit, in terms of hole patching. I mean, there are fixed costs that operators are not going to be able to get away from, even if their models have changed significantly, and they need dollars to be able to do some of that hole patching. So do I see more relief coming down the pike? I do. And the city has been great in considering what that may need to look like. It's just a matter of what it will be rooted in and how it really can be offered in an immediate way, knowing that that is what people need. They need immediate access to cash, immediate access to lines of credit, just to sustain their model for a couple months until we get to the other side. And also while they're waiting on federal relief, which the intentions were good with, for example, SBA's PPP loan, but it doesn't work for restaurants. It works for other small businesses. It does not work for restaurants. So until they get that together, until they now get it additionally funded and fixed, we do need to make sure we're taking advantage of any kind of relief that is out there to get restaurants through this hole patching period, which is really the only way I can think of it. But that is what it is. It is a little bit of money here to be able to cover this bill, a little bit of money to be able to pay for food and ingredients as you are offering to provide meals to the community. I think we're thinking about relief in many, many different ways. We at the association are doing some things modestly through Hook Hall Helps, where at least there's a model to, for a restaurant who decides to be a community kitchen and offer free meals to hospitality workers who have been furloughed or let go, there is a modest relief to the restaurant to be able to cover some costs to procure that food.
Thank you, Kathy. And I know our deputy mayor will be joining us momentarily, but before he joins, I have a question for you, Charlie, and it actually came from one of our members in our audience. How has San Francisco's 15% delivery commission cap affected business revenues and deliveries?
Well, that's really, you know, not something that I handle. I did work for Grubhub for over 5 years, and I know that they do make a profit, and they're one of the only companies that do. But there's an awful lot around delivery. You know, I worked in an office with all of the delivery drivers, the dispatchers, as well as I ran an online ordering, white label online ordering system at the same time for Grubhub. And there's a lot of logistics and hiring and vetting that has to go into it. And then managing those people and making the, making sure they show up. So when you see, you know, 30% for a delivery or 28% or 25%, you know, consider the cost of having your own delivery drivers, your own trucks, having those people show up and getting that food out. It's a big expense. So restaurants have to understand, if you're going to produce something you could sell, like a, hey, great grilled cheese, you could produce that for 50 cents and sell it for $12. You can't sell a lobster grilled cheese that you can, that you're at a loss leader. You have to really think about what your takeout delivery menu is as a restaurant. So reducing it to 15% may help now, but at the same time, to actually get those delivery people out there, there's a big cost to that. So it's a real chicken and egg piece to think about. And I don't think the restaurants understand how they have to rebuild the thing, the profit model, because you have to build the profit to sustain the 30% or the 25% if you're going to get into that business.
Thank you so much. So I know we're joined by DC's Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development, John Falcecchio. John, if you can hear me, just say the word.
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We've been having a really great conversation about how restaurants are reimagining, pivoting, reorganizing the way they do business to stay alive here in DC, in the DC area, but also to support their employees. And so I wanted to ask you if you can talk a little bit about some of the initiatives that you and the mayor's office are undertaking to support the restaurant industry here in Washington, D.C.
Sure. Thanks so much, Neil, and thanks for organizing this. I've been able to get some updates from the team, from DEMPED, who are on the line and been following the conversation. I'm actually joining from the D.C. Department of Health today. We're actually in a meeting right now about the budget and the outlook for the budget. As you may know, the CFO is going to make his projections on the 24th, which is a week from tomorrow, about the district's financial forecast. And then on May 6th, so shortly into May, the mayor is going to present her budget. I would say that because some of what we are talking about in terms of relief and how we'll help with the recovery, really will be that budget document will really be about what we prioritize and what folks can look to for what the district government will do for the recovery. And so, but right now we have taken some interim steps. So we did launch the economic recovery team and they focus on a couple of different initiatives. One is local programs that we can do in order to support the business community. And so you know that we launched the $25 million micro grant fund last month. We're in the process now of evaluating 7,600 applications that came in. And the team and the DEMPED's business development unit are working through that. We expect, and we know, or I should say we know, that about 1,600 of those applications were actually for independent contractors and self-employed. What we're going to do is we're actually going to shift those folks over to the UI program because they have access to that benefit now. And so we won't be able to automatically enroll people, but we will try to find and work with DOES to find ways to make it as easy as possible once that opens up later this month for independent contractors and self-employed individuals. And so that's one part of it that we won't be drawing from the $25 million. So on the rest of it, we still have about 6,000 applications. The team, like I said, is evaluating those applications and making sure that we are able to get, like Kathy had just said, cash assistance into people's hands through the micro grants. We expect that we'll be able to make about just over 2,000 or just about 2,000 awards, with the average award being just over $10,000. And that process we hope to conclude. We keep telling folks that we hope to do it this month, but really we hope to be able to advance it next week. And so that's one local program that we're doing. We also have been looking at our other funding programs, our other grant programs, like the one that Christy Whitfield administers at the Department of Small Local Business Development, the Robust Retail Grants. That grant closed out on March 15th. And what we were able to do was, it was a grant that was for up to $10,000. And what we did was we actually looked at it and we saw that there were about just over 100 applicants that were able to qualify for a grant. And we made the grant cap $7,500. And then we took the existing funding and we also reprogrammed money that we had for other purposes and pushed it towards the Robust Retail Grant in order to make that. So what we're trying to do is figure out the local programs that we have, how we push resources into that and make those awards, and then also make them as flexible as possible. And then we have been working with the SBA. I know there's a lot of concerns about PPP, but the mayor early on got the emergency declaration so that businesses were eligible for the disaster loans. And now we've been promoting that as well as PPP. I know the challenges that folks have with PPP. I talked to one restaurant owner over the weekend who talked about the hurdle of forgiveness, because if they brought their workforce back, they wouldn't have enough for them to do. And so I know folks have been trying to thread the needle on that. And then also the challenges that banks have had in administering it. So we're keeping an eye on it. We're in close contact with the SBA and trying to get information out. We've been doing small business calls. We have one again on Tuesday. And we'll make sure everybody gets that information out. We've been trying to have reps from SBA on to give folks the latest information. And then also, one of the things that we're focused on here in this building at the Department of Health is making sure that we think through our opening. And so we're going to be reaching out to some folks to talk to them about picking their brain about how what opening looks like. So states around the country are doing this work. I know the Restaurant Association is working closely with the National Restaurant Association in order to understand what open means and what the new normal is. And so we're going to be looking to you all as well, because we want to make sure that we're getting it right. And really that how we open isn't something that's top down, but really bottom up for how people feel they can actually accommodate. One example of that is Sean Townsend highlighted for me today. You know, we do have the mayor's order, which mandates that folks in food sellers have masks or facial covering and gloves for their employees. It was flagged for us that folks are near flames and open flames, and gloves might not be possible to get on folks right away. And so getting that feedback is helpful because we want to be agile and nimble and responsive to make sure that we're hearing those concerns. So when we put out updated guidance, each mayor's order is our way of signaling to the community what we need to see. And then we also do guidance that follows the mayor's order in order to make sure people understand how to practically implement what we're asking for. And then the other thing I would say about the mayor's orders is a lot of the media attention is around how we'll enforce it. But really what we've seen in so many cases, and really the great majority of the city, is that people are complying with the mayor's order. And so, and we've had instances of non-compliance. We've actually talked to the operators, and the operators have made adjustments. So I know a lot of times people look for that conflict to see how we're imposing restrictions or how we're imposing requirements on folks. But I just want to thank everybody on this call, because I have seen compliance, and the mayor has talked about how she's seen compliance from our residents and also from our businesses in order to make sure that we're being as safe as possible. So I'll end there. I saw in the chat when I jumped on that a lot of folks are trying to talk about ways that they can also think about ways to create other opportunities to make money. And so we're interested in that restaurants are now turning parts of their space into markets. I know one of the restaurants in my neighborhood has already done that, and others are looking to do the same. Really, what we want to do is we want to make sure that that you're looking to items too. What would be helpful to us to serve the residents is make sure those items that are those hard to find, whether it's things like paper products like toilet paper or sanitizer or gloves or masks, if you guys do have ways to source that, if you get that into your operations, that would be helpful because we know that people need it. So Neil, I'll stop there. I'm happy to stay on little bit for questions.
Thanks so much, Deputy Mayor. And there are some questions I have for you, but you just triggered a question in my mind. I want to ask Colin from Union Kitchen. So Colin, your business is rooted in the concept of giving local businesses a platform to grow and thrive. You also operate a unique combination format of market and quick service restaurant. How has the balance of sales between the two sides of your business shifted during this time, if at all?
So the just to clarify, the balance between
the your traditional market format and the quick service restaurant.
Oh yeah, significantly. We of course have offered the market side of our business along with the prepared foods, the coffee, and sandwiches made to order as kind of the core of our retail. The made to order stuff, the prepared foods, the things that are closer to the sandwich shop, the restaurant have basically fallen off. People aren't buying those sorts of things right now. We have stayed largely foot traffic based. We do some delivery, but largely we're still having people in the store and shopping. And the majority of our revenue and our sales has shifted towards pasta and beans and, well, beer and wine. Rosé remains popular, so we've been able to keep stocking up on that. So pretty significant. I'd say it's like, you know, they were probably close to 50-50, and now it's more like 90-10.
Wow. Great. Wow. So
yeah,
I'm going to open up to the general panel, but I'm going to ask some specific questions to individuals also, because the questions might be relevant to them. And it's questions from folks that are attending today. So John, the first question is for you. And it says, what is the DC government doing regarding coverage for loss of business from insurance companies? They've heard that VA, DC, and Maryland are trying to pass legislation to force insurance to provide coverage. What can you say about that?
So right now, I'd say it's an ongoing conversation. I do want to make sure, I have a call tonight with Councilmember McDuffie, and I do want to make sure that we get some alignment with the council in order to make sure that we're sending one signal out. I know that DSB did post some guidance. We do want to make that, we do want to let folks know that that was sort of an initial read on it. We do want to make sure that we look at all sort of the best practices from around the country. And I think there might be a need for a legislative solution. And that's why I say I want to talk to Councilman McDuffie. We are open to hearing feedback about the best way to make sure that our businesses can actually find a way to utilize it. So I don't want to, I'm sorry if I'm sound like I'm hedging, because I actually am, because I know there's a more detailed conversation that needs to go on, especially with our partners on the council, to make sure that they have comfort with us moving forward on it.
Thanks, John. For any of our panelists, another question from participants, are there any businesses or organizations collecting donations to help feed those in need? So I know we talked a little bit about the work that Jose Andres is doing. Any other organizations that you guys know about that you can share with our audience? Kathy, I see you nodding your head.
Yeah, I talked about it a little bit earlier, and Tim referenced it, but we have, REMW is working in collaboration with Hook Hall Helps. And the idea there is that we ask restaurants to sign up to become community kitchens, where they can then prepare, the minimum is 250 meals per day. But of course, the more the merrier. But the model here is that a restaurant decides to be a community kitchen. They are preparing at a minimum 250 meals, and then they are distributed at Hook Hall between 4 and 6 every day. 4 and 6 or 6 to 8. I will verify that, but I believe it's 4 to 6 every day. And Tim might know the answer to that, but they're distributed every day, and it is designed for hospitality employees who have been furloughed or are laid off to provide meals for them specifically, but it is growing. Rockefeller Foundation came in the other day and they are contributing significantly. And we have restaurants that are very interested because, again, $5 per meal, so that's $1,200, we would then provide as relief to the restaurant, so they are in a position to modestly cover some of their food costs to be able to prepare those meals. So the intent here was, in a day where it means so much to offer services and relief for those in need, I want to also make sure that there is some kind of method to offer relief on a modest level to a chef or an owner who wants to become a community kitchen, knowing that the suppliers are also suffering as well. So to be able to offer a little bit of relief where there's a little bit of this, you know, revenue, circular revenue happening, again, on such a modest level. But that is another effort that is happening. The need is there. So we are hoping that we get more participation from our partners to be able to be a part of that. But many restaurants, we have at least the next 30 days booked with restaurants who have signed up to be community kitchens and offer those meals daily.
Thanks so much for sharing that resource, Kathy. So panelists, I know I asked you to be with us for an hour. If you would indulge me for 10 more minutes, we have tons of over 160 people that tuned in to listen to your pearls of wisdom today. If you do have to jump, I quite understand, so thanks in advance. I just wanted to get a couple more questions before I let you go. Now, another question we have is, for those restaurants, for those food establishments who have decided to take a pause to cut expenses and mitigate further loss, what should they be doing in preparation for a so-called grand reopening? That's for any.
So I'm sure Cullen has some good advice here as well, right? But I think that they need to be applying for all the relief that's out there so they can get access to some capital and cash. And that is helping direct them, whether it's PPP or whether it's EIDL on the small business front, or whether it's talking to their landlords to have those conversations around what relief could look like until maybe additional relief is identified. I am sure many have done that as early as March 15th, but the idea here is that they are trying to arm up for a time of phase one recovery and whatever that may look like. Cullen, I don't know if you have any thoughts that you've shared with some of your folks, but.
Yeah, I'm happy to share, and they mirror a lot of what you're saying. The advice we're giving is around cutting your expenses and getting all the cash that you can, whether it's through these governmental processes or talking to your landlords, reducing the expenses, because there will be a reopening. I think the reality is that reopening won't come with the same level of sales and revenues that we had previously. You know, we are going to face a recession of sorts, whether that's a short one, hopefully, or a long one. Getting our people to really prepare for that in terms of setting their business model to reflect that, whether it's, you know, looking back on previous periods like this, 2001, 2008, and just thinking about what's the cash that's going to help you push through a downturn that could extend for, you know, a long period of time. So getting the money prepared and thinking about your future staffing and your future business model is the thing to be doing, you know, right now.
Thanks. Another question from one of our participants is there a local effort to push for a government ordinance to lower fees for third-party delivery services in the works? They eliminate almost the entire profit margin for many restaurants and food service businesses. So either John or Kathy, or both.
Yeah. Charlie, I don't know that you're going to like this, but there is an effort, but it's an effort that is more thoughtful. It's not designed to eradicate needed business models to be able to sustain an uncertain time. It's really just considering some thoughtful efforts that go into really a devastating time for our restaurants. And the reality is that as much as it is incredible that our restaurants are so resilient to be able to pivot on a dime to operate differently, it's just not sustainable. It's not a sustainable model, and relief is going to come where everybody is coming to the table to see what can be done to be able to mitigate some of the costs that are out there. But I will tell you that I loved hearing what you shared to better understand the Grubhub model and models like that, because that is really important. It's similar to OpenTable or Resy when you're talking about that platform and what they do for operators. So the effort is not defined. The effort is that they are just a part of a conversation as we get into, you know, phase four of what relief may look like.
Yeah, and there are other things that that are happening in the industry that I know about. I mean, there are fees that the restaurant doesn't even know they're being charged, or the prices change up online and they didn't change their prices, but the third party companies changed the prices in order to make more profit, or not paying the delivery drivers. So there's some nefarious things that are happening. So more regulation for that, so they know exactly where those monies are coming from, is probably a really good idea.
Yeah.
John, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think I've heard, I have heard it mentioned to us, but I haven't heard much energy from like the council to impose a cap. So, you know, I'd love to hear more from Kathy and from the industry too about what they think the right way to approach it is. And I know some folks have said there might be a compromise, you know, within the industry. The other thing I was going to say, and Kathy, to lob a question to you, I know you were talking to the folks at AOBA as well, just as people think about kind of another issue, which is you know, lease and how they approach their landlords. Did anything come of that conversation with AOBA?
Not really, but not, you know, not because they didn't want it to. It was somewhat of a, this is so complex. What we did agree to, and what I have been encouraging our restaurant operators to do, is more of the, have the conversation with your landlord. Because what I am hearing is that more and more landlords are absolutely willing to work something out and be accommodating around what this period looks like, knowing that 6 months may be very different. So nothing came out of a formal collaborative, let's present this and maybe see how the city can be helpful or how they can be a part of the solution.
Right.
I would love to be able to push that a little further and maybe talk with you about that. Also, going back to the third-party delivery, I can share a little bit with you. Charlie, I'd love to connect with you before I share to make sure that our approach is really thoughtful, because it's not necessarily a cap as much as it is kind of a relief period and then going back to what may be needed in terms of a financial operating model. But John, I will share that with you as well.
Great.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you
for those responses. One final question, and anyone can chime in on this. You know, I can see a day when restaurants are reopened in some sort of a normal, usual fashion. I suspect you guys are all discussing operating protocols and procedures to make customers feel safe. And demonstrate cleanliness in your operations, and of course, paying attention to your employees' health. So any one of you, sort of, help us look forward 2 months from now, 3 months from now, 4 months from now. what would your restaurant operations look like?
I guess I could speak on that a little bit. I think coming out of this, I think the landscape will change for sure. I think in specific to DC, the restaurant landscape will change because the type of restaurant that will survive this and succeed on the out coming out of it may not be the same that went into this situation. So I'm curious, and I think about that all the time. But in terms of how we operate, the transparency and the forward-facing part of the restaurant, I think will have to be, you know, you'll have to show the processes of your sanitization, of your safety procedures. And for many restaurants that have open kitchens like mine right now, like almost all of my operations do, I think that becomes more, like we're more forward with what we do in the background so that there is nothing to guess about in terms of the guest safety. And even when we start to think about like the tableside presence and like the whole, what happens to social distancing after social distancing is over, I'm curious of how some operators will approach that in terms of like just something as simple as a credit card transaction. And so I think there's opportunities on the uptick of this when we come out of it.
Great. So listen, I want to thank you all for being here today. I want to give you 30 seconds before we go to give any words of advice, admonition, best practices to your colleagues on the panel, but folks who are attending this that may be in the restaurant industry. So Anne, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, thank you. I want to say just thank you again for having me today. While we're not in the restaurant industry specifically, I guess just one way that we've operated is just sort of being open to solutions anywhere, borrowing and stealing ideas from friends, colleagues, etc. So thanks again for having me today. And please do be in touch if our service can be of help to anyone. Thanks.
Thank you. Charlie?
Hey, and thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it. Just the thing is the new normal today, and it's streamlining your businesses to understand where the fat is and how you can operate simply, how you can bring technology in to reduce labor and get food out faster. Those are the things that, you know, towards a credit card payment processing where you're held right at the person's fingertips instead of taking them back and you never touch a card. The new norms. We have to look at different things, like I was saying. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Tim?
Thank you for having me. Support the community directly around you. Support those restaurants, because that's how we're going to get through this. And then I hope everybody doesn't forget the collaborative nature of what's happening right now when we leave this, because that's kind of what's keeping everybody going right now, is just the amount of information being shared and the amount of help being provided up and down the street.
I totally agree with you. John?
No, just thank you for having us on. I want to just make sure that folks know that we're going to have the district's economic recovery team. We do have a director of external affairs. It's Tatiana Torres. And Neil, if you want to share that with the group too, so they have Tatiana's contact info. Mine is really easy. I'm just John, J-O-H-N, at dc.gov, if you want to drop me a line. And then I think that spirit of cooperation, we want to make sure that we're working cooperatively and collaboratively with the industry to make sure that it's clear that we're working together. We want to see you succeed because of what you mean to the city. And so look for ways that we'll continue to try to be responsive and to be agile and nimble in order to make sure that we all get through this. As Mayor Bowser says, we're all in it together and we'll get through it together. So thank you, Neil, for having us on. Thanks for organizing this as well.
You're quite welcome. Before I give Kathy the last word, I want to thank all of our panelists and attendees for joining today. We're going to send around a PDF To everyone who attended, our panelists, we're recording this. We'll also send a recording of the event. And if you have any concerns or need support, feel free to reach out to us at retail@downtownbc.org. And Kathy, last words of advice from you.
I don't know that I'm going to share advice. I'm just going to thank you for having all of us on, and thank you to all the panelists. I feel like I've gleaned some great insights from each of you. And as we talk about collaboration, I hope we're all in that space going forward, as we're all in the same industry. I think John's points around earlier around how people can get stuck, especially in our industry, around when an order is issued and immediately they jump to enforcement. I mean, we have been really, really fortunate to be able to work with a city that has been so helpful, listened, offered great insight, heard our insight as well, and to stay in this forgiving space, knowing that an order may come out, but that does not require that everybody is immediately having to adhere. It's the idea that we are all trying to prepare to make sure that we're operating in the way that we need to. So I thank everyone on the call, and Neil, it was great to see you.
Great to see you too. I want to thank my colleague, Emily Mooney, who put this all together. Emily just joined us a few months ago, has an extensive retail background. This is her brainchild. So I want to thank her publicly for doing this, and we will see you guys around. Please, everyone, be safe. Thanks again.
Bye, everyone.